Whoa, mama! We have Carmen Cusack on the pod today. You all know her and love her as the Tony nominee for the beloved musical Bright Star. Well, she has joined us for a phenomenal chat. We're talking Flying Over Sunset. We're talking Designing Women. We're talking Wicked. Everything that this incredible entertainer has done, we cover on this pod. And she has a special return concert at Fine Signs 54 Below on October 22nd and October 24th, which you can get tickets at 54below.com. You'll find her right on the main page. We also have a really cool opportunity for you to support our podcast at patreon.com/thedramapodcast. It's where we give all of the extra little dish. It's just some chats between Connor and I. We have these amazing bonus episodes, as well as access to our Instagram close friends. Come on and join the party. We are so excited, and please enjoy this episode with the lovely Carmen Cusack. Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet.
Did they book?
Who got nom?
They optioned no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
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 Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life in New York City.
And the world. I'm Connor McDowell.
And I'm Dylan McDowell. And we are fresh off of the Tony Awards.
The 2020 Tony Awards finally happened. Oh my God.
In 2021.
Right. I know. In fact, in like 2 years after we'd seen most of the performances too. So it was really,
I know.
It was almost nostalgic for the last like several years. I was like, oh yeah, where was I in my life literally when I saw that performance? You know what I mean?
I know. And it's crazy too. They voted back in March. So this was very much delayed. But I did like that they ultimately turned it into like a Broadway's now reopened, like come and see things, kind of like a big commercial.
But I know, but okay.
It was an odd 4 hour block.
It was so weird. But to that point, Dylan, they called it Broadway's back and then they didn't even have any of the shows that are coming back performing. That was so weird.
They had snippets. They had a little bit of Wicked in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but no Chicago. You're right. No Chicago fans.
I mean, Diana's opening in like a couple weeks.
Yeah, no Hadestown. Interesting. Okay, good point there. But it, as is the tradition of the Tonys, they do often just sort of have the nominated shows perform.
That's true. But, and it was nice that they honored those shows. What are your thoughts? I mean,
well, my man Aaron Tveit finally got his big trophy.
He did.
Yes. So that to me was the highlight. I wept. I was brought to my feet. I'm a little surprised that Slave Play didn't take home anything, though.
I'm surprised too. It's a crime. The crime of the century.
Yeah.
But it's coming back to Broadway. So jokes on everyone else.
I know. It's getting another run, which is so deserved. And I hope I get to see it again because it was truly an important piece.
I know. And Atu is going to be in the returning cast.
I saw that. I'm so happy. Friend of the pod.
And also gagged that Andrew Burnap won for Best Leading Actor in a Play. I told him I thought he was going to win. And yeah. I think he was surprised. I noticed in the moment when they were about to announce it, I saw him like swallow nervously for a second. And I was like, oh, I hope he wins. And then completely shook that he did.
I know. So obsessed.
Oh my God. He beat Jake Gyllenhaal and Tom Hiddleston.
We'll get into more of the Tonys on our Patreon, of course, which everyone can subscribe in the link below, and maybe even in our Dose of Drama. But thinking about that moment before an award category is announced, we actually have someone who has lived it.
Oh my God.
Who has been nominated for Best Actress in a Musical, has sat there at the Tonys, and I have a feeling they haven't seen the last of the Tonys.
I agree. Oh my God, Dylan, this is huge for us because we saw this guest think three times in Cleveland, Ohio, in the national tour of Wicked in 2008. That's right. So this is a moment I've been waiting for so long. Dylan, would you please bring her in?
I will happily bring her in. Our guest today is a nominee for the 2016 Tony Award for Best Performance by a Leading Actress in a Musical for creating and starring as Alice Murphy in Bright Star on Broadway and on tour, for which she also received the Theater World Award, as well as Drama Desk, Outer Critics Circle, and Drama League Award nominations. Her anticipated return to a Broadway stage will finally happen as she stars in Lincoln Center Theater's new musical, Flying Over Sunset, this winter. She has starred as Elphaba in the Chicago touring and Australian companies of Wicked, and as Nellie Forbush in Lincoln Center's revival of South Pacific on Tour. Long before becoming one of the brightest stars in New York City, she slayed London's West End as Fantine in Les Miserables, Christine in Phantom of the Opera, and in Saucy Jack and the Space Vixens, Personals, Over the Rainbow, and The Secret Garden. Stateside, she appeared as Sally Adams in City Center Encore's Call Me Madam, and as the lovable Miss Gardner in MCC's off-Broadway revival of Carrie, as well as Sunday in the Park with George, Ragtime, Sunday on Sondheim, and the recent, just opened, Designing Women as Julia Sugarbaker. On screen, you'll recognize her from Sorry for Your Loss and A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Her Live at 54 Below album entitled If You Knew My Story is now available, and she'll be returning to the venue on October 22nd, 24th, and 25th for her new show, Bearing All. Please welcome to drama, Carmen Cusack.
Hi.
Hello, Carmen.
Wow. That last bit, Bearing All, sounds a bit risque. It sounds like, oh my goodness.
It does.
I know. Is it going to be like an after hours performance? Like, do you have to like know the secret code to come in the door?
Well, I am bearing a lot. And it's basically because I'm doing original material. And it's all about, you know, my stuff is very story oriented. And so it's about little secrets from my past that I've written in song. And just a little girl growing up, never thinking she could, you know, do anything with her life. And then all of a sudden, you know, things started happening. But it's a journey. These songs are little journeys. So I'm excited bear my heart to everyone and to bear this new stuff, to bear all, because it's very vulnerable place to be in, to actually write stuff and put it out there for people to judge.
Oh, yeah. I worked at 54 Below for years, and I was there for your first run, which was like right after Bright Star closed, and you were right. The toast of the town. I remember they just kept adding shows left and right, and you did a lot of material from Bright Star and things from your career. So this will be different then, to be doing your own material. Although you might have done a song or two of your own back then. I'm trying to remember.
I did a couple songs then, but it's of kind of the Americana ilk, you know, so it won't be too far from that kind of vibe of that show that you saw way back in the day.
Ooh, love it. Oh my god, Connor and I will of course talk about Bright Star and all of that stuff as well, but I just need to say what an honor it is to chat with you. As Connor mentioned, we saw you in Cleveland as Elphaba, and I'm remembering now we also saw that tour of South Pacific.
Do you know, I remember that Cleveland gig like it's like it was yesterday, because we had a snowstorm. We were there during this whiteout, and I was working with Katie Rose Clark. She was my Glinda. And she'd just gotten this little puppy, and this puppy got really sick. And it got really sick on this one particular day when it was a whiteout, and they still wanted to do the show. Mm-hmm. But I was not feeling well, and nor was Katie. And we were like, we're not trudging through thigh-high snow to go do two shows today. We're both not feeling well. So I told her, look, I've got to call out. I just have to rest my voice. And she said, well, my little puppy's sick. And so we ended up in my, what do they call them, the PT Cruisers? In the PT Cruiser, during a whiteout, all I could see was just like these two dark, dark trails in the snow to go to this veterinarian's office out in the boondocks. And I couldn't see. I was like, Katie, I can't see anything. I need sunglasses. I need sunglasses. Like, well, yeah, it's a whiteout. And I'm like, we're two Texas girls. We've never seen this kind of snow. It was just never forget that. And then literally the next day we were in a place in Fort Lauderdale, and I was sat outside in a hot tub in the backyard of, I mean, it's just the craziest thing. Touring in the United States. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
That is so wild.
I remember that snowstorm because we braved the storm to go down there to enter the lottery, and no one else was there because it was this awful storm.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. our wonderful father drove us there. I'll never forget it. And we of course won the lottery. So that was like,
but you were in the show though. I think it might have been the night before the major whiteout. Because we definitely saw you and Brad Weinstock and Dee Dee Magno Hall and Clifton Hall and the whole gang.
Oh, I love those guys. Yeah. I miss them.
I want to dive into all of these things about your career because I am obsessed. But before we do, I'm wondering about how you're doing now. Carmen, are you well?
I am very well. Thank you.
Love
I'm very blessed. Feeling so incredibly blessed. More than I think the words can't explain how grateful I feel right now.
I can feel that coming from you. That's incredible. Yeah, you're obviously in Arkansas right now doing this Designing Women stage adaptation.
Yes. Yes, my first, you know, show back, you know, back in the saddle again. But I get to play this woman that I've always, you know, thought was just so incredible. And you know how I don't know if y'all get into political arguments here, there, and tither, but I kind of sit back on them because I wish that I could articulate my anger, my passion, and how I do really feel about how things have been going. But I always kind of, you know, lean back in the conversations because everyone else is doing such a better job at eloquently explaining their thoughts that I just kind of listen a lot. And I always say, God, I wish I could just really get in on this argument and say, yes, that's true. And that's true. But this is how I feel about this, and just say it eloquently. And I just feel like Julia Sugarbaker does that. She just speaks her mind, and she her words just flow out in this beautiful array. And I get to now be passionate about what I feel has gone on the past 4 years and do it through Julia Sugarbaker. So I'm feeling very, very blessed.
Oh, I love it. Cause it's been modernized, right?
Yes. It is like binge watching Designing Women, but being like a fly on the wall, watching these women in this scenario with the COVID, all the challenges that we've had in the past 4 years, mm-hmm. of politically, and then some, you know, with the health issues that we've all had. It's just been the craziest time.
Oh, absolutely.
So it really is kind of like, you know, looking in on these women and what the things that they would say about what's going on, because they were all so different. You know, there were some liberals, there were some conservatives, and all the mixtures were in there. And so the conversations that you would have with these people that actually still genuinely love each other, but feel differently about things, mm-hmm. and then being able to understand from each side. And I think Linda Blesworth has done an incredible job at explaining people from every angle, because I think we need to continue having these dialogues, but with more kindness.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. What a cool opportunity. I mean, people have been calling for Designing Women to be brought to the stage for so long. So I think when it was announced that you were doing the role, I think everyone collectively was like, oh, well, that makes sense.
Yeah. I didn't see it, but it's so strange. I did First Wives Club in Chicago several years ago. I think it was like almost 10 years now. And Linda Blesworth did the book for that.
Oh, okay.
And although First Wives Club didn't see the light of day on Broadway, I was very grateful to meet her. And I know she kept saying, even though I was channeling my best Diane Keaton in First Wives Club, she kept saying to me, you just remind me of Dixie Carter. You just remind me of Dixie Carter. And of course, I didn't really get to watch Designing Women when in its heyday, because mm-hmm. I was over in Great Britain, you know, getting married, trying to start my career over there in West End. But I remember her saying, God, you so remind me of Dixie Carter, and I'm going to bring Designing Women to the stage at some point. And you've got to do that. You got to play Julia Sugarbaker. And I just, oh, that's so sweet of you. And didn't think anything of it. And here we are 10 years later, and she's done it.
Oh my God. That's an amazing story. It's really cool how life can like circle around like that. You know,
it is. If you last long enough.
True. Very true. And of course, you're working with Elena Hendricks, who our generation knows as the stepmom in The Parent Trap.
Yes. And I know her as Alexis in Dynasty.
Oh.
Okay. Well, there you go. There you go.
As the Brits say, Dynasty.
Yes, Dynasty.
How cool. Okay. So when does Designing Women end and Flying Over Sunset start?
Designing Women, well, I have to leave early, unfortunately, but Designing Women is ending the end of this month. I think they've extended already because the ticket sales are doing so well and the audiences have been just incredible. And, you know, everybody's just, you know, having a grand old time. It is hilarious. It's very, 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 very funny. So we're doing very well there. So they're extending for a week. So I think they go until the end of the month. I have to, unfortunately, leave early to get my Patootie over to New York to start working on the Four Below shows that I'm doing there, yes. And all, and start rehearsals for Flying Over Sunset.
Oh my gosh.
So you've
got
fun.
So much going on.
I know. I can't believe it.
Early November is when previews start for Flying Over Sunset, right?
That's right. Yep. Early November. And then opening night, I think, is December 14th.
I mean, Carmen, yeah. I am so curious about Flying Over Sunset. It was back in 2020. It was sort of the show that everyone was like, what is this going to be? It's this original musical.
Yeah.
And it's sort of historical fiction in a way. Would you mind explaining a little bit about Flying Over Sunset?
Well, what I was so excited about at that particular time, it was that this season of 2020, which obviously didn't have, well, the season happened, but the show, because of, you know, the obvious reasons, but at the time it was going to be the only original musical for mm-hmm. the season. Which I thought was really interesting. It wasn't a remake of something else. It wasn't a musical based off of a movie that had been made, or, you know, it was the only original musical that was happening. And I was like, that's really cool. And it gave me some question marks as to why is there not more mm-hmm. original musicals? It's really hard to get the venues, you know, what's going on. And then of course we were supposed to open to our first preview March the 12th.
No.
And that was the day Broadway closed. It was March 12th or 13th. Was it March 12th or 13th?
12th. So then you had your final dress though?
I invited one friend to the final dress the night before. Because I don't like people seeing my first shows. I just don't like people seeing my first shows because you never know what's going to happen. So I invited one friend of mine, and he's still the only one that's seen it. And then it just, yeah, it was shelved as everything was. But luckily for us, you know, Lincoln Center has its subscribers, and they just promised us, you know, up and down that it was as soon as Broadway was back, that we would be back, and that show was going to happen. I mean, the set has already been built. The costumes have been made, you know, why not? So I'm just feeling incredibly, incredibly grateful to come out the other side of this.
And that cast. I mean, Tony Yazbek and Harry Hayden. How do you say his
name?
Don't ask
me. I always get it wrong. Harry Hayden Patton. I
mess it up
every single time. And then I look at him and he just winks at me. I'm like, I know. I got you. I told him it's his fault. If he wants us to say three names, that's his fault.
I think it's Hayden Patton. Somebody told me once it's like eggs and bacon. Hayden Haddon Payton.
Harry Haddon Payton. Eggs and bacon.
Harry okay. Haddon Payton.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know if I'm following the eggs and bacon.
I'm with you.
I wonder if he'll be in the next Downton Abbey film.
Yes, he is. Because he is? We have been Zooming, doing like every other month Zooming with the cast just to keep everybody, you know, just to keep the flow and keep the energy and the family together. And he was away in quarantine, I think in Paris or something. He was like,
oh, cool.
On set, but in quarantine, he'd just gotten there. And they had to quarantine before he got on set. So yes, he is in the next one.
Wait, so Carmen, who are you playing in Flying Over Sunset? And what can I expect when I come to see the show?
Okay, I am playing a woman called Claire Booth Luce. She was an actual person who lived. She was a conservative Republican, lived in the 1950s. She was also an ambassador. She had her thumb in so many pies. She was also a playwright. She was also a fashionista. Everyone looked upon her for the latest fashion. She was, you know, in a strange way, she kind of reminds me of similarly. She's a little bit similar to Evita in that way. But then, okay. Of course, she's a Republican. She was a very, very staunch conservative. Hmm. But she just was, she had so much energy. She just wanted, she was doing everything. I don't know how she juggled the things that she did. But also, she was tripping on LSD. And I think some of the reasons for that were that she had some tragedies in her life. She lost her daughter in a car accident. And literally, I think less than a year later, or just about a year later, she lost her mother again in a car accident. And so she was just dealing with a lot of mourning. And I just think that she possibly was experimenting with LSD to just find the meaning of life. I don't know, just find out some things about herself, or maybe just work through some things. She thought that microdosing would help. And it's so interesting that all of a sudden it's coming back into, you know, I'm reading articles every time. I can't open up a magazine anymore without reading an article about the medicinal health benefits of microdosing LSD.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's LSD or not, but there's a TV show on with Nicole Kidman right now called Nine Perfect Strangers. And there's some microdosing going on in that. I don't know if it's LSD or not. Yeah. Is it? Okay.
I don't know. I'll need to look it up. But yeah, I mean, there's apparently a lot of benefits with anxiety and all sorts of stuff.
Maybe I need to get me some of that.
So it's interesting. And the cool thing is, I consider this a play with music, not necessarily a musical, because pretty much the only time that we sing is when we're tripping. And James Lapine just decided, you know, he found these characters, like Cary Grant and Aldous Huxley. He found these characters, you know, they all were lived in this era, in this time, and they all lived at the same time during this time in Los Angeles. They were always back and forth. And so he just thought, what if these people and their circles, their social circles, were mingling? And what if they decided to trip together and see what came of that? And so that's the life in which he has created with these characters.
Sounds fascinating.
Oh my God, I can't wait. I love original stuff, and I love stuff that's very creative in that way. So I can't wait. I'll be there.
Yes, Carmen. Please do.
This is like a terrible transition, but we're talking about what you're doing soon. But we'd like to ask all of our guests about the beginnings of their careers and where they, or maybe not even their careers, but just in their, where they first found an interest in the arts. We call it the Ring of Keys moment, where you found that recognition and you saw yourself in some sort of artistic experience. Do you feel like you had that Ring of Keys moment?
Yes, I do. It was on, I think, a Saturday morning, or maybe it was a Sunday afternoon after church. We always had the classic movies on. There was a TV before TCM. It was just on one of the normal channels. They would always like play classic movies. And I remember watching Doris Day in Calamity Jane.
Amazing.
And she was dancing about in this leather, you know, or cowhide manly suit get up, you know, with her cowboy hat on, just being a tomboy. Well, I was a little tomboy I'm still a bit of a tomboy. And she was out there looking like the guys and jumping up on the bar and singing and dancing. And I just thought, God, that looks like so much fun. And she looks like she's having so much fun. And she's not only getting to sing, because I love singing. And I think my first aha moment was, you know, singing in front of a big congregation of people at church, and then people clapping and me thinking, oh, they liked that. I got the bug then. And then watching her just dance about and act, because I thought, well, she's getting to sing and act. That's even better. So yeah, I think that was really when I realized, okay, I want to do that. Yeah, I want to do that.
I love that. No one has ever mentioned, we never really had like a working conversation about Doris Day on here, but I can imagine that she was a bit of a trailblazer too in her time, getting to play this range of roles.
She was. And I always just used to think every time I looked at her, it just looked like, it was like the sun smiling at you. She just looked like she was oozing warmth and goodness constantly. She was a good egg. Yeah. I'm pretty sure she was a good egg, right?
Oh yeah. I've never heard anything bad.
Yeah. You're right. She did have this star quality around her charismatic nature. You know, she's amazing. Well, and then Carmen, you've gone and done so many iconic roles. I mean, talking about how Doris had a range, you have had a range. I mean, when we were going through your bio, I'm literally like, okay, Fantine in Les Mis, Nelly in South Pacific, Elphaba in Wicked, like in addition to everything else we've already mentioned. But do you have a favorite role you've ever played?
Oh my God. Well, I feel so incredibly grateful that I've been able to play, you know, all of these, you know, blockbuster shows and these leading lady parts, these strong women. You know, Alice Murphy, God, I mean, that's kind of been a game changer, that show. Bright Star was a game changer for me, especially coming back to the United States. And it was my first Broadway show, hopefully not my...
It's not, yeah.
But I would say my the most fun I had in playing a role was when I played 92 years old as Dot. Yes. In Sunday in the Park with George. And oh, and here's a really interesting thing that is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So when I learned that role, it was for Chicago Shakespeare Company. And Heidi, God, I hate it when I blank out. Heidi, she played my sister in Wicked. She played my sister who I would twirl Mesmerize, her about in the wheelchair.
Oh, yeah. Heidi Kettering. Yeah.
Kettering. Mm-hmm. Heidi Kettering. Yes. But she and I had been cast in this Sunday in the Park with George with Jason Danielli, who is... Yes. He's such a sweetheart, sweet, sweet man. And so the first day I got to start rehearsing as Dot, Heidi is behind my wheelchair. And all of a sudden we looked at each other and went, hold up. This is weird because I used to be the green girl pushing her in the wheelchair. And now she's playing his in the second act, she plays George's girlfriend or ex-girlfriend because I broke up. And so it was just the weirdest thing. Anyway.
Oh, that's so funny.
That's so cute. I love. So we need to talk about Bright Star. Because as you mentioned, I mean, game changer. You gave such an incredible performance. And it was that A Star is Born moment from that season, oh, Carmen. Gosh. I mean, it was funny because everyone was like, oh my God, she's just arrived on the scene. But then when you start to read or, you know, look into your career, you've been working your butt off forever. Oh my God.
Forever. Yeah.
Well, which was 2 years because by then you were just like a, you know, sprightly, young, fresh face. But for real, you played all those roles we already talked about. And then everyone was kind of like, who is she? Who is she? Who is she? But you had made such a name for yourself touring the country, performing in the West End, right? Like, so cool. And I think how special that after putting in all this work, you know, for some people, Broadway might seem like the end all be all of theatrical experiences. And for you, for it to come a little bit into your career, I imagine that was probably a different experience than you graduating from college or, you know, whatever the kids are from who come from Michigan and they go and then they star in a show and they're like, oh my God, I got my dream at 22. But for you, it came a little bit later. So I imagine that was probably special in a different way.
Well, I have to say, no, I got my dream at 23 or 24 because that, you know, I did Phantom, I straight out of the boat, basically, literally straight off the boat because I was in the QE2 for a year and I decided to become a child bride, basically, to, you know, just decided to give it a rehearsal with a guy from the UK. And I really flew the coop really young, really, really, really young. So I was already in Great Britain in my early 20s and was already married. But I auditioned for this gig, Phantom of the Opera, and didn't have an agent or anything and got the gig. So I feel like, you know, my dreams did kind of start there, although I never really had a plan of being in musical theater necessarily. I just knew I wanted to sing and act. And so, you know, I guess it goes hand in hand that would be, yeah. Yeah, I you know, so I was already living my dream. And I think what happened with Bright Star and that whole thing happened at the time that needed to happen, because if I had been any younger, it probably would have been harder for me to go through the workshop process, going through all of that was expected and in that role. In front of the likes of Steve Martin and Edie Brickell and Paul Simon, just literally as far as just literally in the same one room thing, trying to workshop this stuff out, you know, falling to the floor crying in front of all these incredibly, you know, people I've grown up admiring all my life that, you know, if I'd have done this when I was younger, I might have, you know, everything comes when it's supposed to come. Mm. And I'm just... You know, the whole Tony situation came when I was ready to handle it and not let it get to me and not let it take over me. You know, that stuff can be overwhelming and you can get sick because you're just trying to literally burn the candles at both ends. And I'm not saying it's not incredibly exciting to be a part of the whole whirlwind, but, you know, to be able to know your body and to understand what you can and cannot do, you know, where your limitations are, it's very helpful knowing that going into you know, the whirlwind that is the Tony season.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just great to be invited to the party.
Oh, yeah. That Tony's weekend of 2016. Mm-hmm. That was the day that Connor and I moved to New York for the first time.
Oh, my goodness.
And we saw Bright Star. It was like the Saturday night. So I'd imagine you had a matinee the next day before the Tonys or something like that. Yes. But so we saw you all the night before. And then and to see it with our parents, who had, of course, seen you in Wicked and everything, it was just such a special, you know, welcome to the city, and to see this original show with this superstar that is Carmen Cusack, who we had seen back home. It just felt so right. And it was such a warm, welcoming presence that you bring that to all of your characters. I think it's a bit of your Southern upbringing and charisma there, but that performance, specifically the number At Last, is something I will never forget. You really brought the house down.
Thank you. You know, that show was such a gift on so many levels. Walking out on that New York stage after all the things that I've done, all the roles and all the various lives that I already feel like I've lived, to walk out on a stage and to hang out on that porch, it just took me back to that little girl, you know, in the panhandle of Florida, out in the woods, walking back up on the porch to say, if you knew my story, you know, because it was everything. That was Carmen Cusack on that stage telling that story. So much of that mm-hmm. was Carmen Cusack telling that story. And to go out there and sing that song to start that show on my first Broadway night was, I still can't believe I was able to sing that without breaking down and crying, but it was quite a moment.
And then to get to perform it on the Tonys.
I know. And can I say, I thought that was going to be so frightening and scary and nerve-wracking. Honestly, I felt the most calm I've ever felt because of that beautiful cast of people around me. I miss them all so much. And to just be able to share that moment with all of them. And there's a moment where I turn around and I spin and tell me I'm not alone. And I'm just looking at all these people that I love, you know, so much. And just all of them looking back at me, and I'm going to start getting emotional now. Because it was just such a moment. It was such a beautiful human moment of connection that I just cannot wait to get back to and get back to working with people that give their heart and soul every night to change someone's life. Mm. I feel so grateful.
Thank you for sharing that,
yeah.
Carmen.
Oh, God.
That,
I'm kidding.
That's so beautiful, and we can feel it. And like I said, it's one of the unique things about you is that you really have this rawness and this ability to convey emotion so strongly. I think it's because you have your heart on your sleeve throughout a lot of what you're doing.
Oh my God. Oh, just stop now.
And of course, you got to work with one of my favorite men of Broadway, Paul Nolan.
Oh my God. And you know, you just told me that Slay Play is coming back. He is so brilliant in that play. Please. I can't wait to see it again. I'm so glad that it's coming back because now I can bring my husband.
Yes, he was robbed of a Tony nomination for Bright Star. That was a crazy year. And yeah, he was robbed of one for Slave Play. So I know that his day is coming and everything, but he is beloved in this community already. So
he is beloved too. I love that. I love him to bits. I can't wait to see him when I get back.
That voice of his. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that duet you guys sang in the second act.
I've been blinded, yeah.
Oh, so good. Wait, you mentioned your husband, who's like also really hot. So like, what's going on there? Like, how did you meet this man?
This is the man who you were a child bride to.
No, this is my
second.
No
way. Oh my goodness. Okay, okay.
If you knew my story.
Yeah. No, first marriage lasted like 4.5 years. But then I gave myself a break for several years and had a grand old time in London. Yes. As a single girl.
Okay, that's my life's dream. Be a single girl in London.
Yeah, that was fun. And then this guy showed up and he had plans for me that I wasn't even aware of. And he always tells the story far better than I, but he was through a friend of mine, I met him. And he just kind of orchestrated the scenario. And I just thought, oh, okay, really? he's, you know, a little younger than me. And I'm like, okay, I'll have you for dinner. I'll have you for breakfast and that'll be it. But no, it kept going on and kept like coming back for more. So.
Oh, I love it. And I, like I mentioned earlier, I was at 54 during that run and he was there at, I swear, every show. He was the most supportive, like cheering you on. And yeah, even on social media, he posted, or I don't know if he's still on, but I just remember him always posting these supportive, wonderful things about you. He is your biggest fan.
He's incredible. He is. And the thing is, when he's there at my shows, most everyone enjoys watching him mm-hmm. instead of me. Everyone says they just like to look at him. They like looking at him, looking at me, which I just think is
Oh my God.
I'm a very lucky girl.
Yes, yeah.
You've had so many wonderful men in your life. And I do have to ask about one more before we talk about some other things. But Tom Hanks, of course, of all the men.
He is everything you imagine and more. He is absolutely, as you know, he is America's mm-hmm. sweetheart. And he is on and off set, just all the way across the board, just the sweetest guy. I mean, there are no words. I have nothing bad to say about the guy.
I love that.
Really, he was a dream. He was a dream to work with. And thank God, because it was my first mm-hmm. movie. So, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I was scared out of my mind. He just put me to rest. I mean, he put me at ease.
Did you like that medium switch? Because you've obviously been on stage for the majority of your career.
It's a very, very different game. And I really do like the set thing, because the set thing is something that you live 24/7. You know, you're wherever you are, you're with that cast, and it's a continuation of, so, you know, you have different scenes on a daily basis. That was a bit scary, you know, just to not be able to rehearse for a month, you know, up just a scene. You just have to kind of, you know, trust your instincts and hopefully trust the other people around you and really, really live in the moment. I mean, it's a beautiful challenge in that way, but I don't know that it will ever take the place in my heart of live theater. And that's because of the audience. It's because of that magic mm-hmm. that you feel in the air with an audience and there's nothing like that moment.
Yeah. And that was directed by Marielle Heller, right?
Yes. She was a dream as well.
So did you see her in The Queen's Gambit?
Yes. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a minute. Yes, she was fantastic in that.
Oh, amazing. Do you ever have any directing ambitions? Is that something that maybe you're interested in? Or
I feel like I have been doing a lot of that. Whether I wanted to or not. But I have been told that a few times, you know, when I, especially with these workshops, and you start to realize that at the end of the day, we're all learning. We're just all learning. And I've started to realize at this point in my life that I can actually, I'm now a teacher to people that are putting their vulnerability out there. And I just have so much admiration for people that are creating and just able to just throw it out there and see if it, you know, sticks. And that's such a brave, brave thing to do. But I also know that I've been in the industry long enough to know that certain things will work here and certain things that we don't need, you know, mm-hmm. and to try and help steer that boat is really exciting. And I've started to realize, oh my God. So literally people are relying on me to captain a lot more these days than what I agreed upon, but I'm taking it graciously and gracefully and making and doing, I don't know. I think I'm sitting into that quite nicely. And yes, I might be interested in directing something.
All right. Producers, you heard it here first. Carmen's ready.
Wait, Carmen, I would be mad at myself if I didn't ask about playing Miss Gardner in Carrie, which I listen to you on the cast album all the time, singing to Unsuspecting Hearts. You sound so good.
You. And can I just bring up, I just spoke of Jason Danielli earlier. I have to say that the biggest, most rewarding thing that I could take from that experience was getting to work with Marion. She was just such a queen mm-hmm. in every way. She taught me what it really was to lead a cast and to be gracious and kind and yet professional and yet stern at times when it needed to be, and yet get what she needed out of it because she's so well respected and she gives other people the respect that they deserve. And just watching her, she was just nothing but a queen. And I just, that was the best. I got so much out of that from her.
Yeah, that's a tremendous loss that I don't know if we'll ever really move on from. That she was incredible. And the, you know, I imagine a lot of the cast is like these young kids who were playing the teenagers. And so I'm sure that there was some wrangling necessary at times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was a lot of fun, especially at the L'Hortel, because there's only like a one room that's separated with a folding wall. So, we were all crammed in there. It was pretty fun.
Oh, I love it. And I imagine you brought a little bit of your Southern, I keep mentioning your Southern hospitality. I don't know if that's the right word for it. Just the Southern charm, perhaps, to that role, because Miss Gardner is a bit of an outsider in that show as well.
Yes, yes. Well, anytime I can bring some Southern charm to something, it's always there to be had. I think we toyed a lot with going back and forth on that we toyed a lot with do you want me to do an accent? Do you want me not to do an accent? Do you want me to do an accent? For several years, I've had to find some kind of accent because I have a very odd accent. I have a Southern / British accent that when I speak in my own terms in my own as Carmen, which is kind of confusing to people. So I really do have to pick and choose. I have to decide on an accent, you know, so that it doesn't sound like me.
Right. I will say your voice, you were able to capture this power when you were Elphaba specifically, that every time I hear your voice, I hear the way you delivered some of those lines. And I'm curious, you got to do Wicked in Chicago on tour and then even Australia. What was that experience like of getting all painted up in green 8 times a week?
Can I say exhausting?
We've had other Elphabas on the show and they say the same thing.
Honestly? Oh my God. Well, first of all, it's one of those things that, you know, I decided I was going to quit musical theater altogether and I was just going to be a jazz singer. That's all I really wanted to do after a while. I just got a little bit burned out and I just felt like there weren't enough interesting roles for females being had in the market. So I was just like, never mind, I'm going to be a jazz singer. So I literally did take a year off in London and I hit all the jazz venues that I wanted to. It just kind of came to me. It fell into my lap at the perfect time. But then I thought if anything comes up that really takes my interest, I'll revisit going back to musical theater. And so Wicked brought me back to musical theater because that role came up and I thought, now that's going to be a challenging role. That would be a challenge for me because it's more acrobatics, vocal acrobatics, but it's also a really interesting role where there's a lot of stakes and she's an outsider. There's a lot of interesting angles to play this part. And so when that came up, I went back into it, dipped my toe back in, and the rest is history.
Would you ever, if the opportunity arose, play Elphaba again?
I have nightmares about it. So I can't.
I think Julia Murney told us that too. I think she said that she still has dreams about certain moments.
Can I tell you a story about Julia Murney? I wasn't the type that would go online and look at all the other all the other Elphabas, and I didn't really go online and read what everybody, you know, because they would put us against each other a lot. The fan base was always like, well, listen to her, you know. Yeah. But I didn't really buy into any of that. I'm not that. I don't really buy into that stuff for the most part.
You're not that girl.
I'm not that girl. I'm just not that girl. But I do remember seeing a video. Somebody said, oh, but look at this. And I think, funnily enough, it was one of the other witches that said, hey, look, but look at this. And I was looking at this and I'm watching Julia. I was like, yes, girl. Yes, yes, yes. Love that. Love just the quirkiness and all these kind of really interesting things she was doing. But then, you know, but I didn't do anything about it. But then all of a sudden I was rehearsing for something else and we were in some cafe in New York City and I saw Julia across the way and she clocked me and we both clocked each other and then sat in our different areas because I think I had a friend with me. But then we went to drop. It was during lunch break. So I guess she was probably rehearsing something somewhere near 42nd Studios. And we went to put our trays in the trash and we started walking towards each other, just like, you know, as like two old sisters that hadn't seen each other for forever. And it is true. Unless you have walked in those green boots, they weren't green, but whatever, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You do not know what it's like. You have no idea, unless you played that role, how challenging it is to do it 8 times a week. And there's just a sisterhood. And we literally started slow-mo going towards each other in a slow hug. We're like, girl, come here. I'm like, yeah, I got you. So yeah, that was a really cool moment with Julia.
Oh, that's so special. I love that. Thank you for talking about that. We had her on the podcast last month, or maybe it was 2 months ago. I don't even remember at this point, but she is so amazing. And you're both in that league of extraordinary women who have braved your vocal cords to do that.
I think there was many a Saturday when I would just literally crumble on the floor in the shower, which is probably very gross. I'm just crying because I was like, I don't have anything
oh
left to do more shows.
It amazes me they haven't done an alternate.
I'm too tired to even scrub this green off my face.
I know. Why isn't there a matinee Elphaba or like a Tuesday night, Saturday mat or something?
I'm telling you, if I go down that road of marching to, you know, I should be in the streets in New York saying there should be six show Elphabas, not eight show for both of those girls. You know, they do it for Jersey Boys. They have them on a camp, you know, and they teach them because, you know, these girls are hurting their voices doing that stuff. You've got to really know what you're doing. I thank God for my opera training because that saved me.
Oh my gosh.
You have lived many lives, Carmen. And I'm excited hopefully to be able to catch your show in New York and hear some of that original music and hear maybe more stories.
I know.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I'm literally obsessed with you. Okay. So before we say goodbye, we like to end on a dose of drama, our titular segment where we share the drama in our hearts and on our minds, things we've been consuming lately, things we want to rant about, rave about, share with the listeners. And you know, I'm feeling a little bit dramatic because I sort of decided to sell my soul to a new gym in my new neighborhood. And it's not cheap. And so then they're like, okay, well, here's a perk. You can have a free personal training session. And I had it this morning.
Oh, did you?
I did. And it was mostly a huge waste of time. It was, you know, they sat with me for 20 minutes asking about like my goals and, you know, all this stuff. And I'm of course trying to like crack jokes because I want them to love me and give me a deal. And then we basically just did like lunges and push-ups and like a plank. And then they were like, okay, so if you pay $1,000 today, I can get you for a few more sessions. And then we can like even space them out. So it goes across a couple weeks. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm already paying, you know, X amount of dollars to come here every month. It was a huge bummer. And I'm feeling dramatic about it because I really liked the trainer and he did give me a lot of good tips, actually. So I lied earlier when I said I didn't get anything out of it. But anyway, it's drama. It's drama.
Can I just say, I think that's that is rather expensive. But if you like go, because my husband, if you've seen him, he is into weights and he's into training. I mean, you know, he does his thing, but it is so important if you like start working on weights to have someone there to teach you exactly the right positions to do. Otherwise you can hurt yourself. And so that's all I'm going to say on that.
I know.
It's there to save your body from injury, most likely.
Yeah. He did tell me that if there's ever a flash sale, he'll let me know. So
that's sweet. Hey. Okay.
It was sweet.
We love a flash sale.
Shout out to Dave. I know. Okay. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama? We do love I love a flash sale. I just have to say.
I know. Who doesn't? Who doesn't?
Dylan, do you have a dose of drama today?
I do. Of course, I've still got the Tonys on my mind. And I need to just say my drama is that I feel as though some drama was resolved last night between Adina and Kristen, who, when they sang For Good, the lyrics were palpable. And I felt like, you know, they've known each other for so long. You know, they were the leaders of this ship. I feel like whatever residual feelings they had about being in that show together, they worked them all out. The lyrics, they came alive.
Yay.
It was healing.
That's very good to hear.
Yeah. It was group therapy for all of us.
I'm going to have to watch it. I was traveling to a little town called Rogers in Arkansas for just a little woodsy getaway. So I was not able to see it live, but I'm hoping to get the best tidbits. So I will look that up.
Oh yeah.
It's definitely worth
it.
I like to see a little bit of girlfriend bonding, you know,
oh yeah,
going on, especially from the, you know, they've They've had their rounds, I'm sure.
Oh my God, I know. Oh, and it, I think it was 18 years since Wicked came out or like debuted on Broadway. So yeah, many of us have been through a lot in 18 years. But anyways, Carmen, do you have a dose of drama for us today?
Gosh, drama? Well, I have been marathoning Grace and Frankie.
Oh my goodness, I started it a few weeks ago.
I think it's the sweetest thing.
I love it. I'm on season 3, I believe.
Yeah, I think I'm on season 4 now. I think I'm a little ahead of you.
Okay.
But I can't believe these gals.
You want to talk about someone who microdoses, Frankie? She's into all of that different stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
I love them. Oh, I love them together. I want Dolly to make an appearance at some point for the 9 to 5 trio to be reunited.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Well, Carmen, thank you for spending this time with us. It's been so fun to get to know you and to get to hear about your career. I seriously cannot wait to see you in everything you're doing, especially in New York in the next few months, but for the rest of your career.
Thank you. Can I plug 54, my 54 shows? 22, 24, and 25.
Of October. Yes. Yes.
And yep.
Of
and we're going to put a link in the little notes for this so everyone can go and snag their tickets because it's going to be intimate and amazing.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. You guys are adorable. How fun it is to be able to, you know, do this together. It's lovely.
I know. You know, Carmen, actually, a memory just surfaced. When we saw you and met you 100 times at the stage door at Wicked back in the day, you told us to always take care of each other. And I remember that was the sweetest thing. And we have.
I can see that. that younger Carmen back in the day. Thank you, Carmen.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. She knew a thing or two. Anyways, I know that you're not always on social media, but you do have a Twitter and Instagram. Where can the people clamor to find you?
My name is Twitter and Instagram, but Carmen Cusack. It's there.
That's right.
Yeah, it's there.
Love.
I'm going to start putting links out there. I'm going to start really advertising 54 shows. So
awesome.
I got to get better about this stuff, guys.
It's a lot to worry about. You also have to worry about actually doing the shows. So it's a lot to think about. But anyways, everyone should follow you there. Everyone should follow us at the Drama Podcast. But of course. And follow Connor at Connor McDowell, me at Dylan McDowell. Carmen, you are a dream. We hope to see you soon. And
thank you.
Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama.
Hi, guys. Drama.